Hey, 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 how we doing today? Thanks for being here. Thanks for being here for Ninja. Week two, the final week. Go ahead and stand up. We're going to read a passage of Scripture from the New Testament in Mark chapter 14, verses 3 through 11. We'll read this. While Jesus was in Bethany, in the home of Simon the leper, a woman came to him with an alabaster jar of very expensive perfume, which she poured on his head as he was reclining at the table. When the disciples saw this, they were indignant. "Why this waste?" they asked. "This perfume could have been sold at a high price and the money given to the poor." Aware of this, Jesus said to them, "Why are you bothering this woman? She has done a beautiful thing to me. The poor you will always have with you, but you will not always have me. When she poured this perfume on my body, she did it to prepare me for burial. Truly I tell you, wherever this gospel is preached throughout the world, what she has done will also be told in memory of her." Then Judas Iscariot, one of the 12, went to the chief priests to betray Jesus to them. They were delighted to hear this and promised to give him money. So he watched for an opportunity to hand him over. Let's take a minute and pray. Father, this morning we come to you for this day of service, this day of engagement, this day where we will fully move this church towards serving you and serving this community at a new level. I pray that as we look at this scripture today and as we think about what you have in store for every single one of us, that our hearts would be moved, that the Spirit of God would move through this place, that we would experience something that is very, very different and very, very special today as we think about what it looks like to give you honorable service. I pray that through today, that more people in this church would engage in kingdom work in the local church like never before, and that as we move towards a season of growth and a season of building your kingdom, God, that there would be more hands, more feet, more hearts totally engaged in worship and serving you and serving this community. In Jesus' name, amen. You guys can sit down. This is Ninja Week 2, and we're talking about this idea, a little bit of what you just saw, of just people having these skills and this ability and this willingness to come to the local church and to serve and give the best of themselves and to actually engage people and to do what Jesus said and to be the hands and feet and to kind of be like ninjas, to kind of be like the kind of people that have this ability to take what they are and then what God is doing in their life and offer it on a platter to the people who come into to this place and come into this church community. And so that's why we called this Ninja, because it's a special set of skills and it's God's ability to kind of give us some extra boost if we need it, to scale a wall, to do something that we wouldn't normally do, to do something that is bigger and brighter than ourselves alone. And so I'm excited, because today what's going to happen is every single one of you is going to confirm serving, or you are going to start your first step, if it is today, to serve Jesus. You're going to do something that you didn't know you were going to do. You're going to do something that was better than you thought. You're going to do something that's so powerful. You're going to do something that's eternal, and you didn't know that when you came here today, but that is what is actually going to happen with everybody in the room. So I promise it's going to happen, because God has built us to do this. He has given us the ability to do this, and he wants us to do this, and this is where we find our purpose in life. Have you ever completely missed the point of something? Like this week at the office, John said some idiom, and he said it, and everyone went, ha, 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 and I went, ha. What? And then he explained, oh, yeah, I didn't quite get that. Have you ever had that moment when people say something or do something, or something's being communicated to you, and it just goes over your head? You go, and you look back and go, how did I miss that? How did I miss, they said that, how did I miss that? I have a bunch of stories of how did I miss that, a bunch of times when things went over my head, lots of them. One of them, a classic one, I've told this story years ago. When I was in high school, I was in Young Life. I was heavily involved in Young Life, which is a parachurch organization that goes into high schools and gets high school kids involved. And my Young Life leader came up to me the night that we had club, which was the night that all the students would gather together and have a good time. And then at the end, they just introduce people to the person of Jesus, but really is a lot of fun. And he came to me before that night and he said, Joel, you have a special opportunity tonight to break a Guinness Book of World Record. And I was like, you just tell me how, buddy. He got me. He sucked me right in. He just sucked me right into the whole mechanism of what he was trying to do. He goes, I have at our club room created a 30-foot long trough out of a gutter, and it has tinfoil over it, and it's a foot off the ground. And I have 20 gallons of ice cream, 100 bananas, tons of chocolate, peanuts, and M&Ms. And he said, and tonight, representatives from Guinness Book of World Records will be there to judge if we can make the biggest sundae banana split as fast as possible. And I think we can do it. Do you think we can do it? And I was like, oh, yeah. Oh, we can do it. We can do it. So we get there, and there's like 100 high school kids at this event. And I am like, I'm just like taking over. I'm like, we are gonna break the Guinness World Record. At the same time, these dudes walk in with these like black shirts buttoned up, and they have like whistles on, and they have clipboards in their hand. I'm like, they're Guinness. There's Guinness Book. And Steve's like, yeah, they're here, man. They're here. This is official. This is official. So I get 40 kids all together, and I tell them, I'm like, here's what we're gonna do. I'm like, we're gonna put people in a row up against this 30-foot trough, and we are gonna have the first people do the ice cream when I blow the whistle. You're gonna do the ice cream so it all happens at once. Then you're gonna step over it, and then you're gonna put the bananas on the side of that, and you're gonna step over it, and then you're gonna put the whipped cream on top of that, and you're gonna step over it, and then the sprinkle people, and we're just gonna do it all in sync, like boom, step, boom, step, boom, step, all the way across it. And I was like, we are gonna do this. And I spent like 20 minutes like going through the details and the minutia of how to make this work, and like when they should actually step and how they should do it, and getting the bananas prepped on time and having the scoop already scooped out and just getting ready. And I had them all lined up. I mean, we were like the Redcoats. I mean, we were ready to like have battle with this banana split. Like, we were gonna do it. You know what I mean? Like, it was like, I was ready. The guys were standing there. They had a watch on. They had a whistle. Steve's like, are you ready? And I'm like, we're ready. I got them all lined up. I mean, I just probably as I'm making it sound right now, but it felt like it was to me. In retrospect, I'm probably exaggerating a little bit, but not that much. And it all started to happen, and the whistle blew, and then they just started doing it. Just boom, the ice cream, boom, the bananas. They started going over. And I was like, oh, we're doing it. And then one kid started to not do things in order with the whipped cream. And I went over to the kid and I was like, dude, you don't do what we said. You gotta do what we said. You gotta put it over here. You gotta do it like this. You gotta move it over here. You gotta do it. Come on. And I'm going like this. And as I'm talking to that kid, I turn to the side. I'm talking to the kid about the whipped cream. I turn to the side, and there's Steve Gardner, my Young Life leader, and he takes the largest, like the whole thing of Cool Whip, and he just smashes me in the face with it. And I was like, Steve, what are you doing? You're screaming. He looked at me. He goes, come on, man. And everyone just went into this huge ice cream fight. And I stood there, and I was like, my whole plan is broken. It's all broken. Well, this didn't work. It didn't work with the, oh! And he came up to me midway through as I was like, I was vexed. I was like, this is not okay. I just put tons of effort. We're not going to make it. He comes up and he goes, dude, the whole thing was just to have an ice cream fight. And I was like, you jerk. Like, are you serious? Like, I just gave everything, and I totally missed the point. I thought it was something else. And then finally, as I look back on that, I'm like, of course, leaders do things to manipulate kids to have a good time. I mean, it just makes sense. Like, it was like, there it is. But in the moment, I completely missed it. And the story that we just read is a story of you and me, oftentimes, and the people in the story completely missing the point, completely missing what Jesus is up to. And it has to do with service, and it has to do with worship. But the story we just read is a story of Jesus reclining at a friend's house just outside of the city of Jerusalem around the week that he was going to be crucified. And he's sitting there, and he's reclining, and he's resting. And then a woman, probably Mary Magdalene, takes an alabaster jar, which is a special type of jar made out of stone. Sometimes it was translucent. And she takes this perfume that is made in a different country. And it is something that is so unique and so aromatic, if you will, that it is so valuable, it's worth a year's worth of wages. Maybe if you make a denarii a day in that time, it was worth like 365 denarii. It was worth a lot. And she takes this perfume. And honestly, if you study this perfume, it was called spikenard. And the idea was it was like an essential oil. So she was one of those girls. And she is like really in to the essential oils, man. She is like working it. She has it. She believes in it. It's really valuable. She got it from a long distance. And ultimately what she does is she takes this thing, she opens it up, and she starts to wash Jesus' feet with it. And the type of oil that it was the type that wouldn't just permeate the room. It wouldn't just make the room smell great. And it wouldn't just wash someone. It was actually a type of oil that had these fibers and this quality about it that would cling to human skin. And so ultimately, when you get this type of perfume on your body, it stays with you when you go. And so this type of perfume was often used for people that were dead because they wanted to make sure the body didn't smell as people were around it and it started to decompose. When she puts it on his body, knowing, because he's just communicated to all of his disciples again, that he's about to go into Jerusalem and he's about to be arrested. And in the passage at the very beginning of Mark 14, it talks about the chief priests who are looking to arrest Jesus. And then it says he's reclining. And then it says she takes his perfume. And so the picture is that what God is doing in this moment is ultimately he's giving this perfume, this aroma, to land on Jesus' feet and potentially his head. And the aroma was supposed to stick with him so that maybe while he was going to trial, that the scent of the goodness of what he was about to do could be brought to his mind and brought to the people around while the darkness and the brokenness of what he was about to go through was happening. Maybe while he gets whipped, you can still smell this perfume. So as he's doing this good thing for us, he is smelling this moment where he remembered that he was worshiped and that what he should be doing is worth what he's doing. And as he goes to the cross, can you imagine that there's still some of that scent on his feet while he's hanging there and the blood is dripping down his feet? It's the cosmic picture of what God was doing with Good Friday and resurrection, the beauty and the bad coming together to bring us a future. That's the picture here. And so for some reason, this woman, she understands what Jesus has said. She hears what Jesus has said. And she decides in this moment to take this perfume and give it to Jesus. Now, when you look at that at first glance, you go, that's so special, that's so great. But when you step back, what you see is that you see there are two parties just in the very small part of the story that completely missed it. You have two groups of people that are there outside of this woman. The first one is the disciples. And the disciples, they see her take this expensive perfume. And you know what they think? She's worshiping Jesus. She's blessing Jesus. She's putting this perfume on the feet of Jesus. And the disciples watch her do that, and their thought is something like this. I mean, that is so expensive, he isn't worth it. That perfume is so expensive, there's no way that taking all of it and dumping it on the feet of Jesus and on his head, whatever she actually did, there's no way that it's worth it. Like, you just gave a lot. You just gave your heart. You just gave a lot of your resources all to Jesus, and they're stepping back. Now, just get the picture here. These guys have followed Jesus around. They have watched him do miracles. They have heard him talk about who he was. If anybody would get who Jesus was, you'd think it'd be the disciples, but they're around him for 3 years, and they still didn't get who he was. They watched her take her most valuable possession. There's some people that believe that this was like all she had, like her entire inheritance. Like if it was like her dowry potentially, like this is the thing she had that was valuable. And she took it in that moment and she worshiped Jesus with it. She gave that expensive thing to Jesus, and the disciples are looking at the cost of the perfume and they go, that is not worth it. Like, he is a good guy, but really, like, you're gonna give that? You're gonna give that much? You're gonna give all? You're gonna give that perfume, that rich? What? Ugh. The disciples. He isn't worth it. Now, maybe you watch someone do this. Maybe you watch someone commit their soul, commit their heart, commit their mind to the local church. Maybe you watch them give a lot of money. Maybe you watch them give a lot of time. Maybe you watch them do something really big. Maybe you watch them give all their talent. Maybe you watch them wake up early in the morning, and there's a part of you that goes, you know, that really isn't worth it. I mean, that really, like, that's a lot. You are giving a lot. She thought it was worth it. And then the other party is Judas. And what Judas says is something amazing. Judas watches her put this perfume on his feet, and he thinks this thought. He thinks, whoa, Jesus is worth a lot. He's got a lot of value. In fact, I bet if this woman is willing to give this level of perfume, this expensive of a sacrifice to Jesus, then it kind of is the thing that tips him into thinking, if Jesus is worth that much, maybe I can get something out of my relationship with Jesus. Maybe I can get something. Maybe I can go and give some information. And if he's worth that much, 365 denarii, if he's worth that much, then maybe I can leverage my relationship with him, my proximity with him. Maybe I can go do something where I gain financially because of my relationship with Jesus. And his thought is, I'm going to get something out of this. I'm going to get something out of this. And so some people, maybe you're sitting in the room and you've never served or you've never given your heart to Jesus and really been involved in the local church, but some point you moved along and your reason was, I'm in this for me. I'm going to get something out of this. I'm going to do this for me. I'm going to get something. Maybe you need your ego stroked and you like that position. Maybe you need relationships, so you move in, and it's not all bad, but you have these motives mixed. Like, the reason that you're serving is because you get something out of it. It's the main reason. Judas looked at Jesus and thought, my relationship with him, I'm going to leverage it so that I can gain. And then you have Mary in the midst of a group of men who don't think Jesus is worth it, of another man who thinks, hey, maybe I can get something out of it, so I'll do it. I'll leverage my relationship with Jesus. And you have a woman who sees Jesus for who he really is. You have a group of men that completely miss the point that Jesus is about to go die, that Jesus is about to give his life, that Jesus is the Messiah. You have another man who completely misses the point that Jesus is worth everything, and that if you're going to leverage him for like personal gain for yourself, you're completely missing the idea of him being the king, because you're supposed to offer yourself to him. He gives stuff to you, but you're not supposed to have a relationship with him just so you can gain. You're supposed to be in a real, authentic relationship with God where you love him and he loves you and it's genuine. And you have a woman who sees Jesus sitting at a table. She knows he's the Messiah. She knows he's the king. She has something valuable, and she, while the idea of who Jesus was goes over the head of the other people, the other men in the room, the woman saw that worship was worth it. The woman, you understand, the author in this text is trying to show you that in a society where women were known as basically half citizens, they weren't important, they didn't have insight, the God of the universe has made male and female in his image, and they all bring such beauty and such splendor to planet Earth, but because of brokenness, a woman's role had been minimized and is still minimized in so many ways around this world, that the author is trying to say, hey, do you know that you guys out there, you guys, well, you walked with Jesus, you talked with Jesus, you followed Jesus, you listened to Jesus, and you, after 3 years, completely completely missed the point. You didn't think after 3 years that I was worth it, and you thought knowing me was about you getting something for yourself. And there's Mary, who takes all she has, and she offers it. Because in the midst of all that, she thought that service was worth it. She thought that serving Jesus was worth it. She thought that giving, she cleared all that stuff up. Pride, arrogance, whatever it is, she saw Jesus as a king. She saw Jesus as a savior. She saw Jesus as someone to worship and praise. Just like if you're like that group of guys, you might look at people that worship God and go, man, that's too much. That's just too much. Like, this is way too much. But the people that are raising their hands, the people that are worshiping Jesus, the people that are serving God in the local church, it's like you might look at them as giving too much. But what it is really is that they see the value of Jesus. They see it. They get it. It doesn't go over their head. And there's something special here about a woman's ability to see what really matters. A woman's ability to see what really matters. And this is a picture of a woman's ability to see what really matters. With that, I just want to say Happy Mother's Day. Happy Mother's Day. You know, women have always been able to see what really matters. It's just we didn't know, we don't think, because we're full of pride and arrogance. And God made women to have such a unique voice and a unique role and a unique love and a unique help to the world, and brokenness and death and power and ignorance has gotten in the way, and it even got in the way of those disciples that followed him. It got in the way. They didn't see. And here's this picture of a woman who sees the value and gives. I just want to say Happy Mother's Day to all the moms out there who see things that we don't see, who understand things about service and raising children and leading a business and being a friend and being a sister that we don't see. I want to thank you, moms out there, for being in that position and so humbly staying the course, so many of you so often. Of course, no one is perfect. There's no perfect mother out there, but so many of you have an angle on what life is like. And if we didn't have that angle, we would be in trouble. We wouldn't live. We wouldn't have the fullness. My wife is just like so many moms. She's a great mom, and she does the lunches, and she does the, you know, all the, like, she does the laundry. She does everything. She does all of it. She does all that mom stuff. But, like, honestly, you know, one of the things that she does that kind of makes me think about the story is she has an angle on our kids that I would never have. I would never have. And that is what I'm most proud of her for being a mother, because she has this angle that if she wasn't there, it would have gone over my head. And it's this angle of emotional safety. My wife is a therapist, and she teaches people all the time that, like, the broad spectrum of emotions is what humanity is about. And, like, there's no bad emotions. Like, it's not the goal of life to just be happy. Like, humans are supposed to be sad, and humans are supposed to have fear at times, and it's all part of it. And instead of trying to shut off every emotion except for happiness, what you actually need to do is lean into those emotions and let people express them. And when you do that, then they become the best versions of themselves. And actually, the opposite of that is what causes this anxiety epidemic. And one of the ways that she does this for our kids, where she just has this angle on motherhood that's just so different, is she tells me when one of my kids are upset or whatever, she says, instead of going and telling them to change or whatever, go and ask them why they feel the way they feel. And she's done this thing with our kids where she gets them to actually articulate through analogy the emotions that they're feeling. She did this thing the other day. Jet was with a friend, and some friends, other friends, were picking on one of the friends. And this is a kid in our neighborhood who happens to be a minority kid. And the kids were actually picking on him because he was different. And it's ignorance, and they're doing all that, and they love this kid, but they were picking on him. And Jet came home, and he had tears in his eyes. And Katie goes, Jet, how'd that make you feel? And because she has worked with him on like how important it is to express emotion, Jet actually said this. It was amazing. He goes, "It feels like someone wrapped chains around my heart and put a rock on it and was pulling it to the bottom." And I was like, whoa. And we just sat there and listened to him express emotion, because women have this ability to see things that we miss all the time. And with that, I just want to say, moms out there, happy Mother's Day. We need you. We need your voice. We need you to continue to be strong. We need you to share what you think. We need you to teach us. We need you to lead us. We need you to be the one in the midst of so many of us who completely miss it. It just goes over our head. We need you to remind us what's important. The picture of this woman, Mary, she's a legend because she saw the value in serving Jesus when others didn't. She's a legend because she saw the value in serving Jesus when others didn't. And when you and me will be like this woman in service, in worship, when we see Jesus as he truly is. You give your best when you see Jesus as he truly is. You give your best. And so some of us need to go on this journey, man, of like reconnecting with Jesus. You gotta get back to Jesus. I mean, no matter what you're going through, no matter what the challenge is, no matter what the struggle is, if you want to be a part of something and be a part of the legendary group of people who have served Jesus and worshiped Jesus, then all you have to do is you just have to clear away the clutter. You see, the guys in the room are sitting there and they're going, "I don't know if he's worth that much. That's a lot of money." And then the other guy's going, "I think I can get something out of this." But Mary, Jesus kind of clears it all away. She looks at Jesus for who Jesus is. And the author, in retrospect, is personifying and showing us this woman saw Jesus for who Jesus really is. And when you see Jesus for who Jesus really is, then you give your best to him. And so some of us, we just need a restart. We need a reboot. We need to be reminded about the majesty of Jesus. We need to be reminded about his goodness. We need to be reminded of how loving he is. We need to be reminded of how gentle he is. We need to be reminded of how he turned the other cheek, of how he walked on water, about how he extended a hand of grace from eyes filled with tears to the broken. And he offers that to every single one of us. And when you see Jesus for who Jesus really is, then what happens is service and worship wells inside of you, and you see the best of what God has to offer in this person of Jesus. And when you see the best of who Jesus is, then what you do is you want to bring your best. You want to give your best. You want to offer the perfume. You want to offer the perfume that changes the room. You want to do something in a moment with your abilities and your talents, man, that just bring a level of quality and goodness to the local church that the whole room goes, "Whoa, something's different. Something's different." You see, when this woman, I want you to just get this moment. When this woman opened up this perfume, everybody in the room, everybody in the house went, "What just happened? What just happened?" And what just happened is a woman saw who Jesus really was, and instead of withholding and instead of trying to leverage it, she gave her best. She gave the best that she had to offer. And when you and I give our best in service, it changes the room. It changes families. It changes worship. It changes kids ministry. It changes welcome team. It changes everything. It changes when we see Jesus for who he is and we bring what we have. You see, in church world, like a lot of times we talk about quantity. You know, you just need to serve and you just need to sacrifice and you just need to lay down and you just need to be here a lot and give a lot. And it doesn't really matter like if you love doing it. It doesn't really matter if like it resonates with you. It doesn't really matter if like you're good at it. You just need to sacrifice. And if it's not enjoyable to you or it's not wonderful to you, then you just got to stay with it. You just got to sacrifice. It's going to be painful. But the picture of this woman is not a picture of quantity. It's a picture of quality. There's a lot of things that she could have done. There's a lot of things that we could all do. But what she decided to do was to see Jesus as who he was and then give her best to Jesus. She took the thing that could make the most impact and she gave it to Jesus. And you and I are supposed to do the same thing. You see, the picture of Jesus as our leader, as the person who kind of leads the way for what it looks like to serve. Jesus is the one who served at the highest level. And when we think about Jesus, he came to this earth, he lived for 30 years, and then he did a ministry for 3 years, and then he died on a cross and he was tried and crucified for 3 days and then rose from the dead. And then he ascended into the heavenly realms. And so ultimately what you don't see is that Jesus gave a quantity of stuff. It wasn't just the quantity. It wasn't the 30 years. It wasn't the 3 years. It wasn't the 3 days. That's not what we're all here for, because lots of people can give that quantity. But what it was the quality. It was the quality of Jesus, the Son of God. God, being in the very form of God, did not consider equality with God a thing to be matched, but emptied himself, taking on the form of a servant, and laid down his life and poured out what? Not just all of his life, the beautiful life of Jesus. And when Jesus was on the cross, it wasn't the amount of blood that saved us. It was the quality of that blood. That was the perfect Lamb of God. He saved us. He gave us everything he could. And that blood, unlike any other blood, you could take all the blood in the world and put it all together, and the quantity of it would not save us like a drop of the quality of Jesus' blood. That is where you find your purpose, my friends. That is where you find it. It wasn't the quantity. It wasn't the quantity of Jesus' sacrifice that made it substantial. It was the quality. The quality. And you want to find your purpose? You have to find that quality that resonates with you, that you bring, that's so uniquely special to you, and offer it. Purpose-giving service is produced by the quality of your sacrifice, not the quantity. And here's the deal. I'm going to give you a little tip, and then we'll close this out. Because some of you are going, I want to do that. I want to do that. But some of us wrestle, right? What is my quality? What's my substance? What do I have that's unique? What do I have that's like that perfume? What do I have that could bring that to? Because I can use a lot of time and maybe I can give more money, but really what I want to do is I want to make a difference. I want to be like this woman who saw Jesus and gave her best, and therefore she's a legend. You want to be a legend too. So you want to figure out how do I become a legend? How do I become a legend? What is it that I have to offer? And there's two quick things just to learn, just some handles for how to figure out the quality that you're supposed to bring in your worship and in your service. I find that it happens in one of two ways. Your best will come from one of two places. It will come from one of two places. This is how you find the quality that you're going to offer to the local church. Your talent and skill. A lot of us have talent and skill. What you're really, really good at. What you're uniquely gifted at and what you've refined through practice. And or strength you've gained through life's biggest challenges. It's going to be one of two things. It's going to be the skill that you have, or it's going to be the strength that you've gained through challenges. The skill that you have, that thing that you do, or the strength that you have because of the challenges that you've had. And inside of that, you will find your quality. There's some friends of mine over here, they're both dentists. When they want to serve, they need to go down to the Stowe Center. And I've talked to them about this, because at the Stowe Center, they have an opportunity for dentists to go and give away free dental care to people that come to the Stowe Center. They want to make the biggest impact. They're going to take their skill, and they're going to offer it. And that's where they're going to have the biggest impact. That's where they're going to have their best. There's people in this room that have gone through ridiculous trauma, and your heart has been broken. And for you, what will happen is you need to go to the place where your heart has been broken the most, and God has taken time to build it and put it back together, and in that you will find your strength. In that you will find your purpose. That struggle is the result of God's grace in your life shifting and changing you into a person of strength, and you have that now to offer someone who is just at a different part of the same journey. Two phrases that go with how to find your best, how to find your quality, how to find that thing that you're supposed to get. When you want to find your skill, you want to find and see, and you'll experience this way. When you do something that you're really good at, you will have a bunch of people tell you, you're really good at that. I know that sounds profound. But when you do it, people will go, you are really good at that. And you'll get to the place where you say, I am great at that. And you will say this in your chest. You might not articulate it out loud, but it's what you'll feel inside. When you do something that you're skilled at and that you're really good at, and it's an amazing experience, what will happen is you will also say the words, I cannot wait to do that again. cannot wait to do that again. And people will go, you are so good at that. You're so good at listening. You're so good at building something. You're so good at making kids laugh. You're so good at singing and leading a worship song. You're so good at guitar. You're so good at holding doors and making people smile. You're so good at that. And you'll go, I'm so good at that. And then when you understand that that's your best, you can leverage your best. And to find your strength, here's the phrase. I've learned a lot. Look at the area in your life. Where have you learned a lot? Where has your heart been broken? Where has your life been shattered? Where has your emotion been drained? Where has your failure gotten the best of you? When you find that space, when God has started to rebuild that, you will see that in that, God is doing something for other people through you. And you'll find it, and you'll offer it. And what will happen is if it's your skill or if it's your strength that you've gained through hard times, what you'll see and what you'll feel is an idea like this. I love serving because what I bring makes a real difference. And when you're in the church and when you're serving people, you don't just want to give out a whole bunch of diminishing returns and a bunch of quantity that does a little bit of a difference, that changes people a little bit, that's ticky-tack, and all that's fine, and we're so grateful when you do that. But what God designed you to do is He designed you to do something that's so great that when you do it, the room changes. That when you break that jar of who you are, that the room permeates with something beautiful. And everybody goes, what in the world just happened? I could stand up here all day long and tell you stories of people that when they do what they're gifted to do, I just step back and go, I mean, do you see it? Do you feel it? The room feels different. Everything feels different. A couple years ago at our kids camp, which we talked about, I was standing in the back with Mark Malin, who's a pastor, Carmen's dad, and we were in the back watching our kids team. They were on the video before, Kaylee and Daniel. And Daniel was up here, and he was teaching, and he was acting, and he had drawn some stuff. And he went back, he goes, who the heck is that? I go, that's Daniel. He's on our team. He goes, what in the world? I mean, you're talking about a guy, he has a degree in acting and theater from Miami University. He's one of the most creative individuals you'll ever meet in your life. And when you watch him do what he is good at doing, the room changes. The room changes. There are people that are on this team that stand out front, and I'm telling you, some of you, you know this, you've been put on the welcome team. You're not supposed to be on the welcome team because when you walk up, everyone gets scared. Everyone gets scared because it's just not your thing. And it's okay. It might just be that you want to like slow down and talk. It might just be that it's just not the way you are. You're not an extrovert. It doesn't matter. You have greatness somewhere else, but it isn't smiling in first impressions. And that's okay. And guess what? Some of you in here, that is your thing. And you might think that's a little thing, holding a door or welcoming somebody. But man, when you smile at somebody and that's sincere and you're talking to somebody with your eyes and you're saying sincere things and you're being genuine and you're sharing that with the world, what you just did is you took a parking lot and you turned it into a sanctuary. You take a parking lot, you turn it into a sanctuary. You take a threshold, you take a lobby and you turn it into a place of worship. That's what happens when you give your best. The room changes, man. It's just different. It permeates. Everyone can feel it. It's something that is instinctual and everyone, what is going on? Something different just happened in here. When David does his thing up here and he's making people laugh. I mean, you all, I'm sorry. I've watched him time and time again do his thing. Do his thing. And when he gets up here with the microphone, I mean, you just go, well, there it is, man. He just broke the perfume. I mean, he's just making the room laugh. He's just gifted. It's just special. Every single one of you is like that. We have small group leaders. Joe Connell, he meets with his small group. He's a leader. The kids love him. They love him. So they go, what, this guy? And you watch him with kids, and you watch some of the people on these teams, and you go, they are just special. The room changes when they do what they're supposed to do. And this is the thing that's so cool, is that when you give your best, when you give the quality, when you find out what that is from your skill or your strength, the quality of your sacrifice, the quality of your serving goes through the roof. The experience is amazing. All you want to do is do more. All you want to do is serve more. All you want to do is find it. All you want to do is give. All you want to do is make it happen. And I want every single person in here to understand that you have been uniquely gifted to bring your best, and that when you bring your best, the church grows and thrives, and so do you. And so do you. We have examples of people all over the church. Here's just a few. Listen to this.
Hi, I'm Rachel McClure, and I serve in the student ministry.
Hi, my name's Christian Hughes. I'm on the welcome team.
My name's Zachary Graham, and I serve with the setup team.
Hi, I'm Olivia Sayer, and I serve in kids.
I'm Rob Shelton, and I serve in production.
Hey, guys, I'm Tom Baker, and I serve as a small group leader.
I love serving because my students are able to talk to me about really meaningful things, and I'm able to be there for them in times of celebration and then also in times of need, and I just love that.
Even though I have to wake up early in the morning, I absolutely love it. I love building this church with these men and these women and just reaching out to our community.
Something I love about being on the welcome team so much is that I am one of the first faces that everyone sees.
I love serving as a small group leader because it's another family. It's a group of guys that I get to do life with and grow with, and I wouldn't exchange that for anything.
I love serving in kids because I love teaching the next generation about Jesus. I love watching them grow and learn.
I really like to be the guy that smiles, whether I'm in the parking lot dancing, telling you guys to park, or whether I'm the one shaking your hand saying good morning.
I love it because I create an experience for all of you to find Jesus, and that's what we're here to do.
We serve this community because we love, because Jesus loves us. And what better way to show that love?
It's just such a rewarding and humbling experience to do life with these students.
I'm just super glad that everyone is there. I want everyone there to be happy and to know that we are a fun place and that you are welcome here.
Yeah, we want every person, we want every person to find that spot. We want every person to be the ninja, to go forward, to like get the skill, to leverage the strengths, to bring who you are, to like, you know, figure out how to dominate water. Whatever it is, you need to figure this out. You need to move forward. And here's the process. The process can be a little bit grueling. It can be challenging because it can take some time for you to figure out what your thing is and what you're best at. And so what you want to do is we want every single person right now to grab the card that is on the chair underneath you or next to you right now. It has the word ninja on it. It has the word ninja on every single person. I don't care if you serve already. I don't care if you've been coming here for 100 years. You need to pick this card up right now. And here's what I want to do. I want every single person, everyone listen, I want every single person in the room to fill this out. And if you already serve, then what you're going to do is you're going to mark the area that you serve in. And then you are going to put your name here and then just put, I already serve, or I'm already a ninja, or don't call me because it'll bother me, whatever. Just, you don't need to put your email address. You need to put down your name if you already serve, and then just, I already serve, and mark the box that you serve in. If you are not engaged in what we do, I need to tell you today that it takes several hundred people every month, several hundred people, 200, 300 people to make this place go. And right now, we need at least 175 more volunteers. 175. Everybody say 175. 175 additional volunteers. So, all you need to do is just take a little bit of a guess, use a little bit of your intuition, mark an area on here that you think might be the first step towards you giving your best. It could be the beginning of you bringing that quality. It's just something that spikes your interest, something that makes you excited. When you heard those people talking, you might have heard them and go, that's an area where I think I could find my niche. And then you need to mark that down. And if it's two areas, that's fine. Mark down two areas, no more than two. But put your name and put your email address very, very, very excessively clear on the bottom. And every single person is going to fill it out. So even if you're like, I'm not doing this, I'm telling you, if you don't fill it out, I will have my friend John over here who's ripped. He will tackle you. Every person is filling this out. Everybody say that. Every person is filling. We're all filling this out today. This is God's purpose in your life. This is what he has for you. And so you're going to do this today. So here's what I want to do. I want, if you already serve, I want you to stand up right now. Stand up right now if you already serve. Give it up for this group of people. Look at these people. This is amazing. Look at this. This is amazing. Now, stay up if you serve. Stay up. Now, just to make it hyper clear, everyone else stand up, because you're all going to be serving soon. You will all be serving soon. You will all be engaged at some point. And so I have one more announcement. When I am done and I say go, every single one of you, before you leave, has to take your card back to the blue tent. It's in that corner. I don't care. Don't go out those doors. If I see you in this hallway, I will ninja star you. I will do something that is probably illegal. So don't, you need to go back to the blue tent. Every single person, go to the blue tent. There's a purple tent if you want to get engaged in kids ministry or camp, kids camp. If you want to sign up for kids camp, that's the purple tent. Every person needs to go to the blue tent. All right, you with me? I have one more thing. Here we go, one more thing. In 2 weeks, no church. Rejuvenate. No church on the weekend of Memorial Day. No church. Everybody say no church. And that means that you are going to rest, you are going to relax, and next week we're going to talk about that specifically. So, now's your time to be a ninja, head to the blue tent. We love you guys. We'll see you next week. Without the peace, face a bit of truth, the truth.